Write that down for me, Saito.
All right, welcome back, everyone. Hello from Burbank. I'm Justin Nipper. Welcome back to another episode of Write That Down. We're on the Fight Game Media Network. I'm back with Fumi Saito. And today, what we talked about, Captain Redneck, Dick Murdoch. And I'm not sure how many of you are familiar with not just Dick Murdoch and his career in the States, but much of his career and success was over in Japan, and not just for New Japan. It was All Japan. It was JWA. It was Kokusai Wrestling. It was Fujiwara Gumi, Wing, IWA, and so forth. He was a true freelancer, it felt like. Freelance attitude. Lonesome Rider. We talked about his work in the States, too, of course. And we talked about him and Dusty, Texas Outlaws. We talked about the Hardliners. We talked about how he made moves like Brainbuster famous. And the calf branding, the knee to the back of the head, he made that famous. But what we didn't focus on, the rumors that have gone on for years about Dick Murdoch's alleged racism. Apparently, there was a rumor that's been around for years that he was a member of the KKK. Now, while it's hearsay, I'm not defending it. I just can't prove anything about this fellow Dick Murdoch. And from that perspective, that's why we just focused on his wrestling, his career. We want this to be enjoyable for you, and we want this to be, I mean, this is definitely something to be talked about, and there is a discourse to be had on wrestler behavior, especially back then. And of course, if these rumors were true, it does change a lot of things, and personally, I wouldn't have any desire to discuss someone like that, regardless of how talented they were. But since we don't know that, we didn't cover it, and that's why I'm telling you now, because I didn't want to avoid it either. So that's the deal with that. If you have thoughts or you want to talk about more of this, email me, contact us. I just wanted to let you know that we're not talking about that on today's episode. We talked about the in-ring career, and we always try to give you guys a little bit more of a positive spin. We're trying to avoid the dark side of the ring stees. So again, if you have questions, comments, or you want to expound on this area of Murdoch's life, let us know. But just up front, we're talking about his career, and if that makes you uncomfortable, I completely understand. But in my mind, I've separated compartmentalized his professional work with the rumors of what may or may not have been said or done. That's for you to decide for right now. All right, if you have not already, please subscribe to the Fight Game Media Network podcast feed. It's on Apple and Spotify, Downcast, Stitcher, wherever you usually listen to your podcast. Please hit the subscribe button. It helps us very much. Thanks for all the kind words lately. Thank you for the support. And without further ado, let's talk Captain Redneck, Dick Murdoch.
Yes.
Life and Times of Dick Murdoch. Redneck Dick Murdoch.
That's in America. He was just Dick Murdoch in Japan. Madoku.
Madoku. Yes.
That's Madoku. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Like the vowel sound, you know, at the end. But he was a very important figure in all through the 70s and 80s, well into 90s. And another wrestler, just like, you know, last time we talked about Adrian Adonis, the today's fans, you know, probably don't know who he is. And well, he passed away back in 1996. And a type of wrestler that, you know, we should really, you know, talk about, because his legacy and importance And the influence, you know, into today's wrestling has been so overlooked. His the whole career has been, pretty much overlooked. And he was so talented. And he was said early on that this guy was going to be NWA, you know, National Wrestling Alliance World Heavyweight Champion, kind of like Harley Race was. And it's like today's audience, you know, because I want to, you know, aim this kind of topic to some of today's audience that NWA, that the National Wrestling Alliance once upon a time was the closest thing to undisputed world title or the monopoly in wrestling business before Vince McMahon's era, right?
Yeah, it's not like whatever the Billy Corgan group is doing right now.
Oh, but they know this legacy well enough that they want to be.
It's related. NWA.
They're calling it like the oldest wrestling organization in the world.
And same type of belt and aesthetic, but yeah.
Yeah, and then logos you're talking and about studio wrestling and all. Yeah, like a very much like a retro style, you know, the whole atmosphere. But the wrestling was like that, you know, way back when.
Yeah, and what the time you're talking about, this is also before WWF, WWE was a thing. So this was pro wrestling.
Territory.
Was pro wrestling. Yeah, and if you're the champ,
territorial. Yeah,
you were big all over the world, everywhere.
Oh, pretty much, yes. And Dick Murdoch was born 1946.
Mm. 1 year after World War II.
Right, right.
Baby boomer, so he's a baby boomer.
Baby boomer, definitely. And also Waukesha, Texas, right? It's like not Houston or Dallas, like a big city, you know, but the more you're genuine, you know, Texan. I mean, everything's
Texas,
big in Texas.
Texas. Yeah.
Texas. Yeah. Yeah. There you go. And talks like a Southern Texas, really. His accent and language and everything. And also he was second generation wrestler. Dick Murdoch was. His actually father, but stepfather, Frankie Murdoch was a wrestler. Okay, we'll start with this. Dick Murdoch, you know, was born 1946, August 16th. At the same time, you know, in this deep, you know, Amarillo, the Canyon, Texas area, Dory Funk Jr. See, Dory Funk Jr. was born 1941. Terry Funk was born 1944. So a couple years younger than Terry Funk, Dick Murdoch was. And Dory Funk's and Terry Funk's father, Dory Funk's, we call him Dory Funk Sr., but at the time he was Dory Funk, period, right? Father Dory Funk was running Amarillo, Texas territory. Now we're talking about territory days of wrestling. Paul Bosch's big Houston territory in Texas, and Joe Blanchard, Tully Blanchard's father, running San Antonio, Texas, and Amarillo, Texas. Dory Funk was running his territory, and decades later, Von Erichs in Dallas, of course, you know. And Texas is big enough to have like four or five different full-time wrestling companies with their own roster. Interesting, you know, not there, when there was no national run, you know, like a running, I mean, like WWE or today's AEW, that according to your geographic area, you did have local wrestling, and it was fairly big enough that they ran full-time schedule, and they had their group of wrestler roster. They used to call it stable of wrestlers, and Dory Funk was running Amarillo and the surrounding area his territory, running full-time schedule with their own guys. And on top, Dory Funk, we should call it senior then, Dory Funk senior against Frankie Murdoch, Dick Murdoch's father, was their main event card.
So the Funk family has a really important role in Dick Murdoch's career, yeah?
Oh, definitely. I'm going to get to it. The main event one night was Dory Funk against Frankie Murdoch, Texas Death Match.
Ah,
that this is a couple of different theory to it, but the famous theory is that's where Texas Deathmatch was invented.
So for those that aren't familiar with that term, so Texas Deathmatch was, it's a stipulation.
You either pinfall the guy or submit the guy once, right?
Mm-hmm.
And referee will start, you know, count like a, you know, like a count of 10. If you get up before the count of 10, the match continues until you cannot beat the count 10. Now it evolved into last man standing match, Roman Reigns against Brock Lesnar or something.
Mm-hmm. So basically, yeah, so you have to be pinned and then get a 10 count or submit. KO or something. Yeah. Or sure, yes, or submit.
Yeah, the referee start counting, you know, if this guy can get up. If you can get up before the count of 10, match continues. And there was a night, you know, this Dory Funk's company, they only gave one match, Dory Funk against Frankie Murdoch. One match, Texas Death Match, right? To settle the score. 13 falls each. You
know what I'm saying? How long was that in total?
Oh, I'm gonna get to it. One match lasted until 4 o'clock in the morning.
Oof.
Or until the dawn. How's that?
So that's more like back in the original days of pro wrestling, that matches. Yeah, would but take
just
forever.
Imagine your, you know, professional wrestling with bar fight.
Yeah, that adds a different kind of flavor to the experience.
And you're in Texas.
Yeah, you're going to watch a four-hour brawl. That's it. That's what you're watching.
Yeah, and perfect Dory Funk Sr. against Frankie Murdoch. And this is what gets interesting. Dory Funk Jr. Today's Dory Funk. You know, everybody think he's old, but when Dick Murdoch and Dory Funk met, Dory was 9 years old and Dick Murdoch 4 years old.
Wow.
Four. So they both grew up in business, right?
Mm.
And Harley Race told me one time that Dory Funk, when Harley Race was young, he spent a lot of time in Amarillo, Texas. Like they were brothers. Like Dory Funk, born 1941. Harley Race, born 1943. Terry Funk, born in 1944. As Race put it to me, that it goes like this. It goes like this. They're all a year and a half apart. Okay. Dory, Race, and Terry Funk. All one year and a half apart. They're like brothers.
And he's sort of the unofficial Funk brother, yeah, growing up.
Oh, definitely. And Dory Funk was basically choose Harley Race to drop the belt when he was NWA World Champion.
I see.
Yeah. So Dory Funk, Harley Race, Terry Funk, then Dick Murdoch, a couple years younger than them. Very
makes
interesting.
Sense.
Makes sense. And also another famous tale is Southwest Texas State University, State College. Now it's Agricultural Tech, right? They changed the
Texas
name.
Texas A&M.
Yeah. But it's the same school that they just changed name like 20 years ago. But the West Texas University College, State College, State University. Let's just say Southwest. You had Dory Funk, you had Terry Funk, you had Dusty Rhodes, you had Bobby Duncan, you had Bruiser Brody, you had Stan Hansen, a little bit later, Manny Fernandez, the Tito Santana, the Barry Windham, the Ted DiBiase, the Tully Blanchard. All those guys went to the same school. Isn't that interesting?
It's amazing to think who came through that school. It was so, as a fan, when you hear
Not everybody
that,
graduated. Some did, some didn't.
So correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think Dick Murdoch was even officially a student there, was he?
Actually, he went to Southwest for one semester.
I see. Okay. So
then he attended football practice, but never went to classes.
I see.
Yeah. So he was there one semester. So that, does that make him alumni?
Why not? In this case, why not? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And the funny story is he only attended school like one semester, but played alumni football games.
That's, I think that's the story I heard, that yeah, he played the alumni yeah. football games.
Right. But the Dusty Rhodes, the, not just Dory and Terry Funk, but the Stan Hansen, Bruiser Brody, and you had like people like Bobby Duncan and, you know, Dusty Rhodes in between, and then you have Manny Fernandez, the Tully Blanchard, the Ted DiBiase, the, all these people, Tito Santana. Oh my God, it's what a football team, right?
Yeah, and when fans read about that and hear about that over the years, there's so many fans that think that you have to go through, first you do football, and then you yeah. train for pro wrestling.
I believe they had pretty big football team, like, you know, 70, sure. 80 guys, you know.
And, but also, football was different as a business back then. It was not the money-making machine it is now. And
like an NFL, right?
Yeah. Wrestling was where money was, so that's why you had so many football players becoming wrestlers back then. I mean, it was a better right. financial
opportunity.
Only
a small number of people get drafted into NFL, or when they had AFL or other, you know, smaller league. But becoming football, I mean, professional football player, good thing. But what, how many seasons altogether, you know? You only get to play, what, the 5 to 7 years? If that, right?
Yeah, it's limited. It's
very,
it's
limited
shelf life.
I think so. Anyhow, Dick Murdoch was like that. So he attended the Southwest for one semester, probably, and attended all the football practice. But the tale says he never went to classes. And when you didn't, you know, make the classes, you're not in team either.
Right.
Not allowed. You know, college thing, you know, eligible thing. But anyhow, right. He started wrestling professionally also right out of high school in 1964.
Okay.
Yeah.
How old was, so and, he had to be what age? Like 20?
60, right out of high school, 64.
So he's or like 18,
yeah, because he was born 1946, so he was 18.
Okay, yeah. So yeah, he was young.
Oh, he would have started, you know, when he was 16, you know, I mean.
By that time, when he was 18, 19, how big was he by the head? Was he already a big guy?
Oh, I'm same size?
Yeah. Okay. So he was pretty.
Yeah. The funny story is the Dory Funk told me one time when they met as a kid, it looked exactly the same as Dick Murdoch today.
It's funny. Yeah.
I mean, like a chubby kid.
But, you know, I don't know about you, but in my life, I feel like there's some kids you see and you look at them, you see an old face, you see an old soul in them already. You know
already,
I mean?
Yeah. Or not quite, I mean, like a cut bodybuilder body, you know, big boy, but like a kind of chubby.
Natural, you know? Strength, natural body.
Yeah. Well, you know, all in all, the Dick Murdoch never lifted weight, you know.
But he did look like a tough guy. He looked like somebody who could beat you up. And back then,
yeah, and then really tall and heavy set, like natural 260-ish, 270 even.
Athletic like a football player.
Oh yeah, he was throwing drop kick, the flying head scissors, and everything else.
And he did the knee to the head, the falling knee drop to the head.
The calf branding.
Calf branding. Okay, I didn't know it was
called that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
That's kind of his signature.
His thing, yeah. I'm not sure if he invented it or not, but he really did that, right?
Mm.
Calf branding.
Sounds like a Texas name.
Texas move, too. Yeah. Right, yeah. And this, as a kid, both Dory Funk, Terry Funk, and Dick Murdoch all witnessed their fathers doing Texas Deathmatch, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in the territory. And the first trip, young Dick Murdoch's first trip was 1968. So he must be 22.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. With people like Dick the Bruiser, the Buddy Austin, young Hurley Race and all. And then when he went to AWA to become Texas Outlaws. Dirty Dick Murdoch and Dusty Rhodes, young Dusty Rhodes. Heel, young, and was programmed against very similar, you know, but the generation older, you know, real heavy set blonde guy, Dick the Bruiser and the Clasher Rosalski.
Yeah, it's almost like both teams sort of mirrored each other's looks.
Yeah, I think so. But the Dick Murdoch and Dusty Rhodes even taller. Same kind of chubbiness and short blonde hair.
Yeah, and bleach blonde hair. And
all played football, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And similar, you know, beer drinking bra style, right?
Mm-hmm. And that both had similar down south twang dialect accent.
Yeah, and short black trunks.
Yep. Yep.
So they like you said, mirrored each other, really complimented each other. And I guess Dick Murdoch and Crusher was, getting a little older.
Mm-hmm.
And Dusty Rhodes and Dirty Dick Murdoch was young, big, like a heel, you know. And then they had successful run. The reason we're talking about Dick Murdoch today was that, 1964, between 1964 and then he passed away in 1996. So he had 32-year career.
Substantial.
Yeah. And out of 32 years, he spent his 28 years in Japan. 28 years in Japan,
So that's people that, like myself, that I'm familiar with Dick Murdoch, and he had it runs all over the States, but in
that
Japan,
too, yeah, because he worked Crockett, NWA Crockett had a program against Ric Flair a little bit later on. He worked with the NWA Florida, Texas, of course. He worked a lot of different places, but mainly he wanted to come to Japan and spend 15 to 20 weeks out of the year. That's 4 or 5 months out of the year.
That's a lot. That's just like a Bruiser Brody did and Stan Hansen later did.
Yeah, he was doing it before Stan and Brody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The reason he wanted to come to Japan was that he thought it was a paradise because he didn't have to drive.
Mm-hmm.
That the tour bus does it for you, right? He never had to look for hotels or motels for that night. And as you get off the tour bus, that you already checked into hotel and then the keys handed. Mm-hmm. Right. All you have to do is just, think about your match tomorrow, tonight. And a lot of times, he kind of found, that's kind of Japanese culture. But people come up to you and want to buy you dinner, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah. It's he'd gotten used to it. And it's wow. And then he doesn't have to drive. He doesn't have to find hotel. And he doesn't have to do this and that. And all you have to do is just show up at the hotel lobby and get picked up by tour bus, go to building and work and come back to the hotel and eat and do that for about 3 or 4 weeks, then get paid real well and go home and get rest, rest up and do that about 4 or 5 times a year for 28-year period. He was one of the wrestlers early on, in mid-70s, that one of the candidates to become NWA World Heavyweight Champion, along with people like Harley Race and, Terry Funk got the belt for a year, years before Ric Flair era. But he did not want to have world champion schedule, town to town, territory to territory, airplane to airplane, hotel to hotels. That's not his thing.
Hmm.
Yeah,
and
so,
he didn't have to drive, so he could drink all of the beer he wanted to in Japan.
I guess, yeah, all the Kirin beer, Asahi beer, the Sapporo beer. Do you remember Japanese bottle beers, long, tall, brown, bottle beer?
Of course, yeah, that's what you usually get when you go to Japanese izakaya.
Kirin lager beer.
Yeah, you get the bottle of beer and the traditional, the Japanese, the small glass.
Glasses?
Bigger
right.
than a shot glass, but...
Lot smaller than a mug.
Yeah, right. 3.5-4 inches tall. And you
the clear glasses, right?
And you take the bottle, and when somebody's glass is empty, you have to pay attention because you should really be pouring and filling that small
cup.
You
observed that in Japan, huh?
If you don't do it,
I don't.
Well, I mean, as a foreigner, I feel like when you're living there, either people are going to expect you to know or they completely don't expect you to know. And living there, I never, there were always.
Then you say, sumimasen, dozo, dozo, dozo.
Yeah, especially at work out like a Bonenkai or something.
Yeah, Bonenkai, you explain that.
Yeah, when you with your bosses or something.
Yeah, year end and yeah, the party thing, you know. Yeah. Mm. Bonenkai season in December coming up soon.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so first time in 3 years after pandemic.
Oh yeah. Oh so my they're God. Expecting, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, we are expecting big Bonenkai season this year.
Oh dear, yeah.
Anyhow, so imagine. You know the Japanese izakaya situation. You actually it's like a bar and grill. So you sit and drink and eat.
Mm-hmm. But eat not there like too. An entree dish. It's just a lot of small like dishes through.
Yeah, 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 like a appetizer forever.
Yeah, it's kind of like you're having a chat, you're hanging out with friends, or you're at a gokon or something, and
yeah, it's like you're having like a buffalo wing forever,
yeah, yeah,
the French fries forever, nachos again, and after nachos, and yeah, it's kind of like that. But the lifestyle, you know, after the show, you get on the bus again, and you know, go back to hotel. Then drop your bags off. Okay, let's find a place to eat. And you end up going to izakaya because it's kind of late at night.
Mm, mm.
And Dick Murdoch apparently loved that style. You know, just like, I'm going to Japan, right? And not having like a full-time schedule in the stateside, he ended up coming to Japan like a 4 or 5 times a year for 28-year period.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting was that he worked all Japan. Okay, first he worked JWA, Nippon Pro Wrestling.
Wow, so he was there with the Funks from early on.
Yeah, JWA, like a now defunct, you know, original company.
Mm-hmm.
Then he worked international, IWE, you know, also defunct older company. He came in with young Dusty Rhodes of Texas Outlaws. Then he had pretty much full-time schedules with All Japan, Giant Baba's All Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, he beat Jumbo Tsura for UN title. So he was in the line of long program, don't you think?
Mm. And it's funny, he's kind of roughly the same sort of size as Jumbo.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. And also regular challenger for Baba's PWF title, Pacific Wrestling Federation title.
Kind of a perfect opponent for Baba too.
Yeah,
the way Dick Murdoch
tall,
wrestled.
Big American and work kind of slow pace
and can take a big, almost comical bump.
Right, take bump for you.
Yeah, think. lots of really athletic movement.
Real athletic
from somebody you wouldn't expect to see that from. But
and not exactly bodybuilder body, but this guy can move.
Mm-hmm. Working class body.
And yeah, and then when you want to have good wrestling match, he'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
When you want to have more comedy oriented match, he can do it.
Mm.
And he had this 50 different way to get out of headlocks. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Mm, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, probably learned from his father or by watching their fathers.
Mm.
So he, if you remember. Japanese wrestling, if it's All Japan or New Japan, they never have promos or the backstage skit or anything like that. That they just come out and wrestle, and they tape the house shows for television.
Hmm.
So all you do is actually go in the ring and have a wrestling match. Sometimes they grab house mic and say certain things, but the storyline in Japan is very, very subtle. Like you want to challenge for the title and stuff like that. And his mentor, Killer Carl Cox, is the one who taught him how to do this, you know, like a vertical sit-down brainbuster.
Oh, that's right. Remember. He was the first time I heard that term was when I was watching.
Brainbuster?
Yeah, brainbuster. That's, I associated that.
Because the form is just like your vertical suplex.
Mm-hmm.
And they go into the move just like vertical suplex, but you don't throw it backward. He kind of hold it for a long time until people start clapping.
Mm.
Then you kind of sit down like formal pile driver, therefore brainbuster.
Right.
He got that from Killer Carl Cox, and he had to be either 73 or 74. Giant Baba, you know, put together a single match between Dick Murdoch and Killer Carl Cox. In Japan, American against American.
And Carl Cox was also kind of same size as Murdoch too.
Yeah, yeah, but the generation older.
They were related, right?
I don't know.
I thought I heard something that they were cousins, or
the definite cousins, Dick Murdoch and Killer Tim Brooks.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking. Killer Tim, it's yeah. the killer thing. Tim Brooks.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Killer Tim Brooks was trained by his cousin Dick Murdoch.
Okay, that's what I'm mixing it up. Excuse
the
me.
All Texans.
All Texans. Yeah. All had good careers in Japan.
Yeah. And Killer Carl Cox against Dick Murdoch, I remember as a kid vividly that they, of course, double juice and the double DQ or something, or the double counters or something, they didn't have finish. But what they did was very interesting at the end. They had this stereo brainbuster in the ring. One, I believe, was Teenage Onita getting it. And the other, I don't remember, maybe like a young Masafuchi or somebody. But the two young wrestlers, nothing to do with this match. But after the count, you know, double count or double DQ, that the brawl continues, right? And all the young wrestlers, you know, like a top and bottom, you know, like a tracksuit. All the young second come in to break up the fight, right? But they're still fighting. And they ended up doing the same signature brainbuster in two different places in the ring, like a stereo brainbuster. It looks so good. Are you picturing it?
Yeah, it's kind of like a perfect story. It just happened to be the perfect timing.
Yeah, perfect, exact same looking brain. Yeah, like a vertical, and you hold the guy so long, like upside down.
Harley Race used to do that too. He was one of the guys that would kind of do the stalled suplex like that, right? Did he do
The hold the guy for a long time.
That's right. not the brain buster move, but the vertical suplex where...
Vertical suplex, yeah, right.
Yeah, pose not, it.
Exact opposite is Dynamite Kid's snap suplex. That's a quick one.
Yeah, that's a good analogy.
That's exact opposite, but... old-fashioned American heavyweight guy would do this vertical holding guy upside down for a real long time for the audience far away. You know what I'm saying?
That's right. Yeah. Show them what you're doing.
Yeah. And it has to be that the wrestling has the moves has to be, you know, have to be something that it's understood by audience far away. It's Giant Baba school wrestling.
Yeah, it's hard to see what you're doing if you're on the mat, grappling, trading holds, headlocks, leg locks. It's without
And then also they were, you know, the old-fashioned wrestling. Well, I was going to say old-fashioned wrestling school, but the school of wrestling, not a wrestling school. But
right.
The old-fashioned wrestlers were told to do it in the middle of the ring, not the side of the ring or by the corner or by the turnbuckle. Bring yourself and your opponent back into the middle of the ring and do it. WWE still does it today. You bring your match into the center of the ring, always. Mm-hmm. You can do certain things in the corner, certain things by the rope, by the apron, but eventually, you know, 10, 15 seconds, you know, seconds later, you have to bring your match into the middle, the center of the ring.
Yeah, you have to make sure that the fans realize that this win couldn't be disputed. It was in the center of the ring.
So that's, you know, once you know it, you know, you watch even today's match. Oh, they're doing it still today. You know, So it's a lot to learn. Anyhow, back to Dick Murdoch. So young Dick Murdoch in 20s into 30s, you know, Dick Murdoch working the JWA, Nippon Pro Wrestling, Kokusai Pro Wrestling, IWE International, then All Japan. Then it was 1981 comes. New Japan, Antonio Inoki steals Abdullah the Butcher from Old Japan and sign him away. And following month, Giant Baba steals Tiger Jeet Singh from New Japan and sign him away and sign with Old Japan. And Dick Murdoch, one of those guys that switched side at the time, from Old Japan to New Japan. Same summer. Yeah.
So there were quite a few big talents involved in this kind of 81, 82. These were pretty chaotic years.
Right. Like Dick Murdoch, all the Tiger Chan Lee, Kim Doc, Tiger Toguchi, even people like Wahoo McDaniel from All Japan to New Japan, Chavo Guerrero Sr., the classic from New Japan to All Japan. And there were quite a few. Yeah. And Dick Murdoch decided to switch side at the time. The reason I asked, actually, he told me in person that why was the reason that you wanted to switch side from All Japan to New Japan? Because I thought the Giant Baba's All Japan was treating him pretty good, right? what Dick Murdoch told me was that Sakaguchi gave me more tours.
Ah, well, it's just business. It was a business call.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. He's, I got 17 weeks this year. 17 weeks is like a 4 months, almost 5 months out of the year, right?
Yeah, and people need to realize that the Japanese yen was much different value
in oh,
the early 80s. And
right.
I mean, that's a lot of money.
It's very cheap now, yeah. But at the time, yeah, yen value was really high. And also, Japan was the only place charging people $100 for a ringside ticket when wrestling in late 70s and 80s in America was like a $20.
Yeah. Yeah, it was definitely what's the approach in America. You want to, I feel like the old approach was to try to get everybody, as many people in as you could, right? Whereas yeah. in Japan or something like St. Louis, wrestling at the Chase, there's more
$50 ringside. Yeah. It was like a $20 ringside was like considered expensive or something.
Yeah.
When movie was $375, right?
Yeah, but also around the States, certain things were cost more, cost less, and I think in Texas,
right.
$20 in 1981. That could
In wrestling business, yeah. even in America, if you were making $5,000 a week, good money, like a great money.
Oh, yeah.
$5,000 a week. And Giant Baba, Anthony Inoki in early 80s were paying like a $10,000 to $15,000 a week to American superstars.
It's amazing. I wonder what the, what is it?
Yeah, a couple million yen a week.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm looking. I just looked it up right
remember,
now. It's $5,000 in 1981 was $16,326. So about $16,000.
Oh, okay. Did you calculate that?
I just typed. Oh, I typed
but
it
now, now what?
It's
so cheap. Yen's really cheap right now.
If he was getting paid, Dick Murdoch was getting paid $10,000 a week.
It was like $8,000 or something.
$8,000. Okay, let's see. And that was 1981.
Yeah.
So let's see. He would be getting paid today about $26,000 per week.
For 17, 18 weeks a year.
Of course he's going to go to Japan. I mean, he could take care of his whole family.
The money was good. Money was good, but no headaches, no political maneuvering in Japan. You just show up at the hotel lobby and get picked up by the bus and go to arena, and arena has like a workout, you can like a workout or practice or jump rope or something. It's all there. Then you have a match, and you just have a match and go back to get on the bus and back to your hotel and off to the next town. And the lifestyle was such that Dick Murdoch enjoyed so much that this is a paradise that I never have to worry. And sometimes I don't even have to pay for dinner. How's that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he lasted with New Japan for a real long time. And he was one of the Booker, Seiji Sakaguchi era.
I see.
Okay. When Inoki turned politician, like in the 80s, before that, like Riki Choshu and Masa Saito came, became more of an office. And all the Americans were like Masa Saito's Americans on.
Right,
like
that's right.
Yeah, Vader, the Scott Norton, the
Brad Rennigan.
It's just like more Masa Saito, Minneapolis oriented.
That was your scene.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah,
the Minnesota crew.
I see. Yeah, I guess. But Dick Murdoch kind of got pushed away, a little bit.
Yes.
And it was clearly written on the wall that it's gonna be Vader, to be the big guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So he got booked less and less. But then again, after New Japan, he worked for Onita's FMW, and the spin-off Wing. And IWA Japan, he also works Tenru's WAR. Then at the end, he was working for professional wrestling Fujiwara Gumi.
So he really went wherever he wanted to.
In Japan, because if this deal's done, he's free agent, another Japanese company won't you.
I think he also took advantage of that in the States, too. I mean, when he did come back to the States, and he had his mid-south
in
run.
Yeah, in between.
Yeah, I mean, they were.
Well, he even worked WWE with Adrian Adonis a little bit.
Yeah, what was their name? Not the East West connection, North South connection.
Something like that, right?
Something like that.
And also WCW, he and Dirty Dickie Slater was at the headliner. No, head something.
Headhunter? Yeah.
No. The head honchos, no. Now, this is, I can't remember, but the Dick Murdoch and Dickie Slater. Dirty Dick Murdoch and Dirty Dickie Slater was a team for WCW for a while, too.
Oh, yeah. They tried to recreate it, too, in the 90s with Bunkhouse Buck. Remember that?
Ah, okay. Very similar. Hmm. Bob Brawling, beer-drinking guy, like a fighter. Yeah. But so he was working these, you know, American companies in the States in the meantime. But basically, he always worked in Japan, and he was well-liked. American side always worked against Japanese, but people always liked him almost like a babyface. Oh, let's and also the very important that the single program that we cannot forget, that the fourth annual IWGP tournament final was Antonio Inoki against Dick Murdoch, 1986.
So it was, I think, were Inoki and Murdoch around the same age?
Inoki's like 3 years older, 1943.
Okay. Not too far apart. So but they were kind of towards the end. Nearing the end of their careers by this point.
Yeah, but they had a very senior wrestling match, though.
Mm.
Like a mature wrestling match, not like flying, you know, between ropes or anything like that.
Mm, no comedy spots. Yeah, yeah.
They had, you know, like a collar and elbow tie-up, lock-up, to headlock, to headlock, to hammerlock, to hammerlock back, to top left lock, and all these things. Yeah. Very convincing. Yeah. And also put Dick Murdoch in IWGP tournament final. How well thought Dick Murdoch was for Inoki's company.
That says a lot. It says a lot.
Yeah, because inaugural IWGP tournament was 1983. Inoki against younger Hulk Hogan.
Mm-hmm.
Hogan won and became the first champion. 84, Inoki and Hogan again. 84. And 85, Inoki against Andre the Giant. And 86, Inoki against Dick Murdoch. So see that he was important.
We also, you know, when he was going into Japan, like you said, he would come back and forth and he would appear for promotions in the States. But also when we were talking about with the team with him and Dusty, the Texas Outlaws, they appeared in a famous movie around this time, the AWA.
Oh, time. The Wrestler?
The Wrestler, yeah.
Yeah, not the Mickey Rourke Wrestler. That's wrestler right.
This is the Vern Gagne. Yeah.
Vern Gagne's 1970 movie, right?
Hmm.
Yeah, the Wrestler. Yeah, he appeared. Young Ric Flair in it. Of course, Billy Robinson in it. Dick Murdoch, Dusty Rose. Yeah, quite a few other guys were in it. And they even had lines. You know?
Yeah, I remember
not just appearing in the background. Yeah.
They were at a bar or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember the scene. They it's not a good movie. I can't tell anybody out there listening to go.
I don't even know that the DVD existed, that the VHS tape existed.
It's on YouTube. You could find
YouTube.
It.
YouTube. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you're interested out there, yeah, it's out there. The Wrestler.
But still, back in 1970, somebody put the budget to make such a movie, and the actual motion picture movie about wrestling, that was pretty big.
Very. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's. I also say, if you're in a movie about pro wrestling back then, yeah.
Yeah, and not comedy, you know, type, you know, treatment.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was pretty serious movie about wrestling, you know. But, Dick Murdoch was in it, right. And maybe he might have been in a short role as a Paradise Alley, too. Terry Funk's Sylvester Stallone movie.
Oh, okay.
Remember, like 76, Paradise Alley, it was right between Rocky 1 and 2 that I guess Sylvester Stallone wanted to make wrestling movie too as well.
Was always used and admired by pro wrestlers.
Yeah, and then a good friend of Terry Funk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Hogan too.
So, yeah, that
both
too, yeah.
Big Japanese stars at the time.
Right. Actually, it was Terry Funk who recommended young Hulk Hogan for Rocky 3 role. Huh. Yeah, he was Terry Funk. Yeah, because Sylvester Stallone was looking for somebody really big, a wrestler for this charity attraction scene. And maybe originally it was going to be Terry Funk's role, but the Terry Funk recommended, I know somebody, you know, it's perfect for that role. Hmm. And he was young Terry Bollea. Already Hulk Hogan, but it was between his first WWE stint and AWA. Yeah. But that movie helped him tremendously.
Yeah, he at least it seems like his name value had to have increased at around that
right,
time in the
right.
States.
As a Thunder Lips. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, with Hogan, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. And after track, but Hulk Hogan was wearing Thunder Lips gown in Japan first.
Oh.
Yeah, in the back he says Thunder Lips. Yeah. I mean, movie name, yeah. But yeah. Actually, Hulk Hogan and Dick Murdoch toured together in Japan in early 80, 81, 82, 83. Yeah.
That's interesting to think about because really, to me, I feel like they're such different wrestlers.
Yeah, but they were in the same dressing room probably 15 weeks out of the year.
I mean, in terms of style and in terms of inside the ring, they're so different, but
Well, around the same time, Abdul the Butcher and Hulk Hogan were in the same dressing room.
Sure. With Dick Murdoch, it's hard to... I mean, you should go out and watch Dick Murdoch's work because he was... I can't... There's nobody really to compare him to these days.
I think he does the best working punch.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Better than Terry Funk? Better than Jerry Lawler?
They're up there. Yeah, definitely. Or you just said Jerry Lawler and Terry Funk, of course, but the same craft.
Yes.
You know, the old fashioned, you know, light as feather working punch, but looks great thing. It was an art, right?
Yes.
And they came out of the same era. Yes. Terry Funk and Dick Murdoch, of course. Yeah.
Murdoch also was somebody who could throw a pretty beautiful drop kick.
For that size of guy, and standing flying head scissors.
Yeah, that's
not
right.
Touching anybody, you know.
Before the times of Frankensteiners, there was the flying head scissors.
Head scissors, right. Oh, yeah, Scott Steiner's, you know, Frankensteiner changed the whole mode or whole, you know, I guess that the whole mechanic of, you know, wrestling there. But until then, yes, Dick Murdoch and Red Bastien's flying head scissors was a really, really beautiful move.
Mm.
And he was doing that to Giant Baba. He was doing that to Jumbo Tsura with New Japan. He was doing that to Fujinami and Inoki. Yeah. So
almost 300 pounds.
Yeah, amazing. And sometimes, you know, American superstar working New Japan and Old Japan and New Japan, and it's the same wrestler, but some guys look better with Old Japan, and some guy looks better with New Japan. For Dick Murdoch, he worked exactly the same.
That's interesting. He didn't have to.
Isn't it though?
He didn't have to change his, you know, sometimes
he was just being himself.
Yeah.
Like you and I talked about the calf branding, right?
Yes.
He was doing perfect calf branding to Fujinami every time.
Whereas you have somebody like we talked about last week, Adrian Adonis, who could work.
Oh, he does that too. Yeah.
But he could also be completely different.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, he could adapt, you know, WWF, for example. He was a different style of wrestler. Where I know what you're talking about, though. His style of wrestling worked wherever he went, which was
his rhythm and mannerism. Yeah,
it allowed him to work all over the world.
Yeah, and I hate to sound cliche, but like what they call a good worker or something, right?
Oh yeah, but it's hard to convey, I guess, that how valuable it was to be.
That's why today's, you know, wrestling audience, that the listener of our podcast has to go out there and go find Dick Murdoch's 70s match and 80s match on YouTube. That the match we just talked about, Killer Carl Cox and Dick Murdoch's single match from Old Japan's mid-70s, that exists in YouTube. You can find it.
And I believe there are a couple of his matches on New Japan World from his time around then too.
Oh yeah, well,
High
definitely the
definition.
IWGP tournament final, Dick Murdoch against Antonio Inoki, the serious one. That was a serious version of Dick Murdoch. Yes. And also 1985, the year before that, he had single match in Japan against Bruiser Brody at Korakuen. Another same size kind of guys. Yeah.
Big guys who can move. I'm sure.
And yeah, I was there at the building that Bruiser Brody didn't really mess with him.
So
Know what I'm
when you
saying?
were there, when you saw them in the ring, what, how do people react to two big Texas pro wrestlers? But I
Oh,
mean,
that
I'm
was
sure it was.
interesting because that was a type of match that the people cannot know the outcome of it. You know, well, Bruiser Brody will beat Dick Murdoch. No, Dick Murdoch's stronger. You know, it's like suspense and it's like unknown territory was there. Actually, Dick Murdoch is tougher. No, Brody's better. It was perfect. And they did the double bloody juice thing. And I don't think they had finish, like double count out or double DQ of sort. Yeah.
Very popular finish in the around that time.
Yeah, because who can win, you know, between
Well,
Dick Murdoch and Bruiser
oh,
Brody
between
in
them or
1985?
even to Tenryu and Choshu, and
Of course, of
where the
course.
stars are so big, you might as well have them
And be
stay
protected.
right,
And
stay
it
protected.
wasn't, yeah, and then it wasn't going to be the only time they meet in the ring.
Right,
If
right.
match is good and it got over or something, that they'll do it again. But Dick Murdoch, that's the Dick Murdoch Bruiser Brody match only happened once. Yeah, they didn't do it again. But oh, there was Akira Maeda against Dick Murdoch match in a single match a couple times.
That's another good styles clash.
And Akira Maeda was already doing UWF style kick and suplex and submission only. Never run, you know, bounce off the rope.
Total opposite to Dick Murdoch, what he did.
Yeah, but what's so smart about Dick Murdoch was though they're fighting outside the ring, right? And teasing double counter, right? But they, you know, they try so hard to get back in the ring, right? And Maeda grabbed Dick Murdoch's trunks. And it's famous. Dick Murdoch never tie his tights. You know what I'm saying? And
So
as
they're not very
Maeda
tight.
grabs yeah, never, it's always loose, you know, always, you know, for some reason, and never tight,
Easy
you
to
know.
be pulled off, you could say.
And as Maeda, as serious as he was, he grabbed Dick Murdoch's tights off, then bare ass shows in at the Korakuen Hall.
Maida couldn't help himself.
Yeah, but it just takes UWF away from him, don't you think?
Yeah, that's how special Dick Murdoch was, I guess. He had that ability to.
Yeah, and then also he could wrestle as much as Maeda wanted it, you know, and there's nothing wrong with the match. And I went to, you know, downstairs and asked Maeda how he was, and he said, "Oh, I got a good sweat." You know, like it was a, I mean, good match. He actually enjoyed it. He had a lot of respect for Dick Murdoch. Yeah, it wasn't comedy, and also he was a tough guy, you know, and he can wrestle and do the serious style when he wanted it to. So Maeda had a lot of respect.
I think the
Yeah.
maybe why that worked, and I think one good reason to watch Dick Murdoch these days is he's a great example of a great pro wrestler who never looked like he had any choreographed things in his
That's
match.
right. That's right.
No
Well,
matter
I
what, no
don't
matter what.
in 19, you know, 1987 version of Akira Maeda and Dick Murdoch, I don't think they went over spots.
Of course, yeah, of course not. I mean, so
I mean,
you
like an
had to.
old-fashioned pro wrestler, they probably call, you know, call it in the ring
Yeah, just
if
go
they
for
have
it.
to. And also they, well, Dick Murdoch spoke some Japanese, like good enough to go in the bar and order your own drink and food.
Wow.
But not quite conversational, right?
Sure.
And same as Maeda's English, he can, you know, communicate, but not in details, right? So I think they just went in and worked.
Wrestling is
Imagine, yeah.
the lingua franca. Wrestling is the language that they had to use.
Of course, of course. So it's interesting, in hindsight almost, that you go find Akira Maeda against Dick Murdoch single match on YouTube or something. It's out there. Yeah, and it's a very interesting match. So Dick Murdoch against Jumbo, Dick Murdoch against Baba, Dick Murdoch against Killer Carl Cox, Dick Murdoch against Maeda, Dick Murdoch against Bruiser Brody, and IWGP final Anthony Inoki match. It's all important. Or Dick Murdoch, Adrian Adonis is a tag team. Great tag team. Lots of tapes. And that's probably why, you know, the guy that the generation younger than the real Dick Murdoch, WWE named one person Trevor Murdoch, and he's still Trevor Murdoch. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Does look like him. He does resemble
the face? Yeah. Oh God, yes. And it was a tale that in 1996, he was still living in Amarillo Canyon area, and he was trying to have like local wrestling called Blast from the Past.
Mm-hmm.
Did I say it right? Blast from the Past Wrestling.
Okay.
It's got like a rhyming.
Yeah. I mean, Blast from the Past is a regular idiom.
Yeah, right. Like a jogan. The Blast from the Past Wrestling in Amarillo, Texas, it was rodeo and wrestling together in the same show. Oh,
very interesting.
Very Texas, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then one night he was having a meeting. Okay, 2 months before that, about a month before that, he had final tour with Japan. That was professional wrestling Fujiwara Gumi. Dick Murdoch against Fujiwara in single match.
It's another very different style.
Oh, interesting.
Clash.
It sounds interesting, huh? Mm. I think the video exists somewhere.
I must.
That as he went back to Narita Airport, he called Fujiwara. He enjoyed it. So he called Fujiwara's, you know, house or office. He called Fujiwara. They talked on the phone. Like, Fujiwara, I had a real good time. Let's do it again. Then Fujiwara said, yes, sir, let's do it again. Right? Because they enjoyed each other. Match, wrestling match.
Mm.
That was June. That was May of 1996. And 1 month later, Dick Murdoch passed away.
Very young. I mean, only
39 years old. Just a couple months.
I think it's 49.
No, 1996, though.
1996, he was born in 1940, so he'd be 49, but almost 50, right?
Oh, okay. But 2 months before his 50th birthday.
Yeah. I mean, when I first ever saw Dick Murdoch, I was a kid. I was me 10. He was in Royal Rumble 1995.
Right. WWF, very short stay.
This is another example of how Dick Murdoch could just work.
Can be in WWF environment. Whomever.
And I remember he was, I was thinking to myself, like, wow, this guy doesn't look like the other guys in the ring right now. And I remember he lasted in the ring for a long time.
Doesn't look like anybody in there.
He looked like he was from the old school. And he was something like the Royal Rumble is a great example of watching him do all of his tricks. You know, his like the headlock stuff,
punch and elbow,
big
elbow
bumps,
stuff to the
comedy,
top of the head. Yeah.
Kind of goofy spots, heel
spaghetti,
spots.
Spaghetti legs.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Or sit on the ass kind of thing, bump. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. So he could walk into WWF and does his stuff and it still works.
Mm.
And back to Blast from the Past Wrestling, that the rodeo and wrestling together. Yes. One night he was having a meeting because he was a promoter. He was going to be a promoter. And they actually ran a couple shows. And that night he said, I'm going home early, you know. I mean, like, you expect Dick Murdoch to stay in bar and drink more, right?
Hmm.
But that night he went home early. All right, see you guys later, right? And he went home. He didn't even change clothes. He laid on the couch and slept, and he was gone.
Ugh. Sad.
Yeah, well, it's like, I heard he didn't even change his clothes. He just laid on the couch as he came home, and that was it for him. Yeah. Just a month later after, you know, final tour, and he made total of 54 tours. It depends on how you count it. You know, sometimes he stayed in Japan between tours because he was there back to back. So he decided not to go home, but it depends on how you count it. But he was in Japan 54 or 55 tours. That's a lot. But he was telling me, or telling people, that I've been here a couple hundred times. Right?
Sure.
Yeah.
And after he'd spent all those years in Japan, among the
28 years,
among the pro wrestling fans there, what would you say their impression or overall image of Dick Murdoch?
Oh, the fan was yelling at, you know, Murdoch, come back soon. You know, like the end of the tour is like a Sumo Palace show, right?
Mm.
And he has, you know, if he's not a main event, he still works like a third from top. And against somebody, and Dick Murdoch's heel American, but still very popular. It's like, come back again soon. People are, you know, just saying it. And very likable in Japan. Yeah. And he picked up language, and he didn't look like bodybuilder, but he was always in shape and happy. And well, of course, Japanese wrestling fan always loved cowboys, right? From your Terry Funk, Dory Funk, to Stan Hansen, to we had more cowboys. But Dick Murdoch was complete Texan too.
Mm.
Yeah,
he wasn't a bodybuilder, but he was a wrestler. It was pretty clear.
Maybe more like a tall sumo wrestler looking, huh?
Sure, yeah, kind of like a slim sumo wrestler.
Yeah. And he enjoyed the culture, and you know, everybody in wrestling fan knew about it, and how he goes to Japanese bars, not the Western American looking bars, but he wanted to go to izakaya and have like a Kirin beer or a Sapporo beer or Ebisu beer or something like that, right?
Hmm.
Yeah. So he was, favorite, was always stayed in main event status. And yeah, it was like that. So, yeah, so that was my Dick Murdoch story.
You know, I was going to say it was cut short, you know.
I think so. Very young. Yeah, he could go 5 more years, maybe. Yeah. It was in shape.
Oh, yeah. The legacy is. I mean, Trevor Murdoch isn't his real son, but that's the last kind of artifact.
Yeah, baseball cap and flannel shirt, and
But if you want to learn about I feel like you can learn so much from Dick Murdoch because he's a wrestler.
The video, yes.
Because when you look at what he does, he doesn't do all that much. It's how he works.
Not like today's spectacular moves. No.
No, he could go for minutes, maybe even hours, just throwing punches. Like you said, the way he threw a punch was fun to watch, and by the time the match is towards the end, there's blood everywhere.
Yeah, and some comedy looking bumps.
Yeah, and I think that it's less like the feeling you get from a wrestling match, and it's you can kind of believe that you're watching this brawl because you're watching this.
And also the way that the faces he make,
very expressive. Very expressive.
Yeah, very animated. The way he holds his own nose, like, oh, it hurts. You know, just expressions.
When he's angry, when he looks at his own fist before he throws a punch, you know?
Sure. And he was usually taller than your opponent, yeah? Yeah.
So, yeah, it's very interesting to...
And you can still watch Dick Murdoch's old videos from 70s and 80s. You can really learn a lot from it.
YouTube, Daily Motion, and then New Japan World are the best
New
ways
Japan
to
World,
watch them in
probably,
Japan.
Yeah, and the YouTube, yeah, you can find a lot, you know, because what's not on New Japan World is they're like old Japan footage, you know, and it's like people should not forget about Dick Murdoch. There was once upon a time there was a great wrestler. His name was Dick Murdoch. And he was in Japan a lot.
I had a big impact and was a regular on the Japanese wrestling scene for years.
Yeah, I felt like I grew up watching him.
Mm. Which is funny because people over here have the same feelings, but watching him in the States.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yes, he was a memorable character.
Yeah, never was a world heavyweight champion, but he never wanted to be. You know, he could have been, but he just wanted to have his way, I guess.
It seems that way. Okay, so if fans that or anybody that's listening out there that has, if we have questions about Dick Murdoch, how can we reach you online?
Or for that matter, any wrestler or any era or the historical event or history is period. Just send me message on Fumi Saito on Facebook or at Fumihiko Daio, FumihikoDayo on Twitter.
And on Twitter, I'm at Justin M. Nipper, KNIPPER. You can reach us there. So that's it, Dick Murdoch. So until next
time.
Yeah,
I got so excited. Almost got the tired talking about it. Just go, oof.
Well, you know, it's I'm interested and in, like learning about how he was such a regular star in Japan, not to many people's knowledge over in the States, you know. It's interesting to think about. You almost had two different lives. If you don't know about it, people don't think this part of their lives exists. So
therefore, pretty much overlooked by now.
But we do. The one positive thing I guess we can say is there's a chance to revisit and discover and learn. And I'm sure these days, if you're a young talent and you're watching wrestling and you watch Dick Murdoch out there, there's probably a lot you could pull from that. Because I think his style is very timeless, kind of
timeless.
Yeah, I'm sure if he was alive and able to wrestle the way he did back then, now I'm sure he could have just as great.
It still
matches.
Works. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, because of the style. So
yeah, it doesn't get old.
All right. So check everything out. Check Dick Murdoch out. But until next time, Fumi, take it away.
So long from Tokyo.
Write that down.